Well, now to one of the novelists and biographers of choice when it comes to bringing history to life, English history it is. A.N. Wilson, as he prefers to be known, Andrew, is the author of seminal historical works, The Victorians, After the Victorians and Our Times. He's also written biographies of Queen Elizabeth II, Dante, Leo Tolstoy, Iris Murdoch and Adolf Hitler. Now, this might all suggest that he prefers to intellectually inhabit an earlier era with different values. But look, he's flown on a modern plane to be in Sydney for the Writers' Festival, very modern entity, to discuss his new book, Resolution, a novel of the boy who sailed with Captain Cook, and also a very interesting book, which it's just a terrific book called The Queen. A very warm welcome to Saturday Extra, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
If I may call you that.
You may call me that, and thank you for the modernity of your welcome.
Well, I thought this man says he'd prefer to be in another century, that the bottom's fallen out of the culture, but I'm going to yank you into the 21st century.
Thank you very much indeed.
I just cannot progress before mentioning the Manchester bombing, which has happened on your soil. And there's very interesting writing in this weekend's newspapers about it already, sort of struggling with it. Do you still read? I mean, some of us, I think, retreat from all of this. It's just too much. It's so inexplicable. How do you approach it?
Well, it's not inexplicable. The question is whether we can do anything about it. And I think the only thing you can do with a problem of this kind, which is, after all, universal. It's happened in Australia. It's happened everywhere that you can think of on the planet, is contain it. And obviously, we have good security services. They knew who this man was in Manchester, but you can't police people all the time unless you rounded up everybody you suspected and put them in an internment camp. And we saw during the Irish Troubles, when they tried that approach with known terrorists or known potential murderers, that it made the situation much, much worse, because it made these people into martyrs and it radicalized the community from which they came. At the moment, the huge proportion of British Muslims are peace-loving, integrated people, and it was actually an imam who first alerted the authorities to the danger of this fanatical character.
Is that so? I didn't know that. Oh, I see. Right. From the area.
This young man was coming to his mosque and the imam rang up the police and said, this man's dangerous, you need to watch him.
And now they're saying that, in fact, his father, well, I suppose it'll be a lot to come out, that his father was worried about precisely this.
And his father has been arrested
in Libya,
and the brother. But I think if you had such a figure in your family, you'd be worried, whatever your religion, wouldn't you?
Well, yes, you would. You hope you would be. There does seem to be, though, a nest in that northern England area around Manchester. I think 320 had already gone from that area to fight for ISIS, and of course they're coming home, and there's also worries about Bradford and Leeds, and there have been for quite a long time.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we had you'll probably remember in 2007, was it? We had an atrocity in London.
7-7.
There were an awful lot of people killed. The underground train was blown up and some buses were blown up at the same time. That was all done by young men who spoke with Yorkshire accents and who were born in the United Kingdom.
Okay, so that's really what it means to be British. I mean, this is very much your area, that sort of business of reflecting on identity, and I'm going to come to that in just a moment. There's something going wrong there, isn't there?
Something's been going catastrophically wrong for decades. But what it is exactly, given the fact that we all accept free trade, and if you accept free trade, this is this is one of the great things which has caused Brexit and all the other things. If you accept free trade, you have to have the movement of peoples. It's part of the deal. And so that there have been immigrants flying around, not just in Britain. It's a problem throughout the world. When you are uprooted from the land in which you naturally feel at home, with your own food, your own religion, your own culture, your own family all around you, where do you find your roots? And one of the answers to that is you go back to your religious culture. And obviously, if you're a fanatic, and in any society at any one time, there are going to be a few fanatics. Religion and religious fundamentalism has taken on a much bigger dimension in world affairs than it had before this great upsurge of migration occurred.
Well, I mean, you're talking to Australia, you know, which is a migrant culture, modern Australia. We absolutely have to think about all this. Look, let's just move on because we have to go to a foreign affairs segment relatively soon. But you have written a lot, and you've obviously dwelt upon this, about the monarchy as this very interesting part of a glue. And you're not predictable, if I can put it to people, because might say, oh, yes, he's a Brit being predictable about the monarchy. But the significance of that they are bearers of a heritage. It's a book about the Queen, but it's much more than that. So have you always felt like this, or are you firming up in this view?
I'm firming up. This book, as I've written, called The Queen, it isn't a biography. It is just a reflection on where we've got to now, and it relates to a lot of this stuff we're talking about. I don't know if this happens in Australia, because obviously the figure of the Queen here is a very, very different... the perspective is very, very different. But in Britain, there's no doubt at all that the popularity of the monarchy and the person of the Queen has grown and grown and grown in the last three or four decades. And I think one of the reasons for it is that she is a focal point. The monarchy is a still point in a very changing and turning world. And I think even recent immigrants feel this. They look around and they see a kind of maelstrom in Britain at the moment. It isn't recognisable in any way as the land in which I was born over 60 years ago, except in that one respect, as far as public life is concerned.
Now, of course, does that suggest that successors won't seem quite as stable, or will they? Because that's exactly what you've been wrestling with. They're symbols of something much more.
I mean, one of the things about the Queen is she is old. I mean, that is her great selling point, that she's always been there. All through the life that I can remember, I think I was just about born in the reign of her father, actually, but I mean, all the life I can remember, she's been the Queen. And as you say, when it's Queen Kate or King Harry or whoever we don't have, it might seem very different. But the thing about a monarchy as opposed to a presidency, and this is where I think I have... What did you say? Firmed up, hardened up or something? I think I've always been in two minds about whether I was a Republican or a monarchist, but in the last decade or so, I think I have become more monarchically inclined, because what you get in a monarchy as opposed to an elected presidency is you get a whole personage who isn't necessarily very interesting or talented in themselves, but they're carrying the past, and every community... needs to be in touch with its past if it's going to step forward to the future.
But of course, you can get a dead set dill as in a monarchy, and that was exactly what happened with absolute monarchies, and that's what we moved beyond.
Yeah, but we haven't had an absolute monarchy in Britain since 1649, when very regrettably we felt obliged to cut off the monarch's head. But since then, things have been, I think, more or less under control.
You actually do say you are in praise of a boring monarchy. You think this is something that was introduced.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's the boringness of it, which is its great saving grace. They're not charismatic. They're not like Mussolini or Hitler or these exciting people. And they don't go in for a cult of the personality. Somebody criticised the Queen... in fairly early days of her reign, for just conducting business as usual. That's what we want. We want business as usual. All human beings need an element of that. Just as, I mean, all children need their parents to be a little bit boring and family life at home to be a bit the same.
You do wrestle with, in a very interesting way, though, the sexual revolution has placed the royal family in a very difficult position. Can you develop that, please?
Well, it put it in an almost impossible position, because... Although modern Britain, you could say, began with Henry VIII divorcing his wife and conducting the first great Brexit of history, which was taking Britain out of the Roman Catholic Church.
And regrettably removing a few heads there too.
And removing quite a few heads. Where did I drop to? I've dropped.
he was the first modern monarch.
He was the first modern monarch, exactly. And... sorry, I've totally lost the thread.
That in fact, the sexual revolution...
Oh, it's the sexual revolution, sorry. Although it was based on divorce, the Church of England, of all the Christian denominations, stood out most firmly against divorce. And when Edward VIII came along and was in love with a divorced woman, not once but twice divorced, I think, wasn't she, Wallis Simpson, the Church of England was absolutely crucial in giving him the sack. But they wanted to get rid of him anyway because he had fascist sympathies and he was a fairly nasty piece of work, as a matter of fact. And then they replaced him with his nice, gentle, reliable brother.
Stutterer.
The stutterer, George VI, who was the father of our present monarch, who taught her everything about duty and keeping a back place. Now, the trouble was, of course, they then became obsessed by the abdication, the reason they got rid of Edward VIII. And then along came the sexual revolution, and Princess Margaret, the Queen's sister, got divorced. Her daughter, Princess Anne, got divorced. Prince Charles got divorced. Prince Andrew got divorced. Mm. And they started to look a bit silly. Because, I mean, in the 1950s, if you were a divorced person, you couldn't even go in the royal enclosure at Ascot at the races.
Things have changed.
It would be rather empty now if you had that rule.
Well, I mean, your point is that, in a way, the royal family are now expected, you suggest, to keep up the suburban virtues of the 1950s vintage, while the rest of the world, you know, goes to pot. Whereas it was completely the reverse.
I know.
Everybody knew about Edward VIII's dalliances and so on, and everybody kept mum because public life had a certain acceptance of the aristocracy's foibles.
Of course.
That's flipped on its head.
That's totally flipped. And, I mean, that's one of the things which has happened in public life generally, that everybody, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, knew that Lloyd George or the King and Queen of England were being naughty behind the closed curtains. But the public persona of British life was that everybody behaved very respectably. The only people who actually kept to that was the middle classes and lower middle classes in the suburbs. The upper classes and lower classes didn't, they were sort of shouting like mad, didn't care. But suddenly, as you say, the royal family has been hoisted with this strange historical petard, and they're the only ones in Great Britain who are supposed to be chaste.
And look, I've just very quickly, you also write about England flourishing when a woman is in charge.
I don't know quite why that is, but it's always historically been the case. I think it must be some deep love of nanny or mother in us that we like to be bossed about by women.
I know, I've heard Brits saying that very amusingly, and it does amuse me. Now, we haven't had a chance to discuss your actual novel, Resolution, a novel of the boy who sailed with Captain Cook with an almost impossibly extraordinary life story of George Forster, but people will have to buy the book.
They'll have to trust you that it's a work of absolute genius.
They will. Andrew, thank you very much indeed for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you
with us. It's been a great pleasure to be with you and to be in lovely Australia.